We were discussing last week the theme of Hamidu Talmidim Harbe, and the ideas behind it, the Chiyuv of Lalamed, and the extent to which each individual has that obligation, the concept of Harbe, which is a seemingly called Marbe Harezem, you know, Meshubach, you know, kind of an idea, which always raises the question, you know, whether quantity, is something which is important in its own right, and especially the relationship between quantity and quality. I want to speak a little more about that. Again, in the when it comes to Sibur Yetzias Mitzrayim, that's one of the chidushim that kala marbe harezem meshubach. Usually, we focus on quality. So we say talmidu talmidim harbe, that it's important to have a multitude of students. What do we really mean by that? What do you accomplish by just having, you know, more? That's one of the things we discussed last week, and I want to elaborate a little more this week. And then, of course, the concept of Hamidu, which we also spoke about, especially the idea of promoting independence, and the idea that that means A, a methodological approach, and B, encouraging people to find their nofech mishalahem, their own particular contribution, which is something which we believe every individual Jew can make, and how that fits in with the idea of Rebbe Talmud relationship and the dialectic of the self-image of a Talmud and the goal of a Rebbe, if you will. These are some of the issues that we discussed last time. So just to highlight it a little bit more, Rabbeinu Bechai in his Perush on Avos really does highlight exactly both of these. When he talks about Talmidu Talmidim Harbe, so he explains Shaharibui B'Talmidim Hu Siba L'Ribui HaTorah Mitoch Shah Talmidim Misrabim HaTorah Misraba U'Mitpashetet Im Rechavei HaAretz Im Zeh Tarbe HaTorah B'Yisrael. So of course this is what we spoke about last week, and that is the idea that it's not that more students, more is more. Sometimes more is more, sometimes more is less. But the idea here is you're being marbe Torah b'Yisrael. It's the idea of Talmud Torah derabim as a separate chalos is also because of this idea that simply ribui haTorah ba'olam, and as I tried to explain last week, also the more people who are involved in Torah and learning, the more perspectives you have, the more people involved that come from with different exposures, different temperaments, different insights. So there's just an aggregate net benefit for the growth of Torah and its expansion in the world. So whether it's the more quantity, but which also leads to more quality, that's one aspect of it. At the same time, this contributes to the quality of the learning as well. Dein tzarch lomar, says Rabbeinu Bechai, shechachmas hamelamdim gam kein misrabe. That the Rebbe is also benefited, by having many talmidim. And v'chein omru, that's according to the Gemara in Tainis, harbe lamadati marbosai, etc. V'yoser michaderai umitalmidai yoser mikula. So this is a great example of, and again, the connection to Evan Masun and Bedin is part of this topic as we discussed last week too. And the Meiri similarly has both the quantitative, and the qualitative components, although in a slightly different way. The Meiri says, "V'lo tehe atora mishtakachas." When we say Hamidu Talmidim Harbe, it's an investment in making sure that the Torah doesn't become extinct and it doesn't become lost. Again, especially Torah Shebaal Peh, which requires the commitment of oral transmission, with everything that implies. Obviously, you secure that by the more people that are involved in it, assuming that you do it properly. V'lo yidaktiku yoser midai, ela lahoshiv bifneihem, ela bale harifin. You don't have to, only focus on the people who have intellectually an obvious contribution to make, right? Sha'etzim akatanim madlikim legadolim. This is again a way of explaining that you can never know where the benefit is going to come from. You can have some nondescript or seemingly limited, you know, person or Talmud, and you know, he could be the little spark, you know, literally that ignites, you know, a whole perspective or approach or insight into Torah. Lo aminan shalei shana adam l'talmud sheino hagun. And the other side of it, Gemara in Chulin daf kuf lamed gimel, el b'mishem midosav megunos shezeh bevadai ra'ui laharchiko harchaka yusera. You have to balance hamidu talmidim harbe. This is goes to the issue we'll speak about in a moment about educational policy. You know, do you have an open kind of enrollment policy and you know, like a city university, you know, esque, you know, approach, or more like, you know, elite, you know, universities, you know, that, you know, focus on the most, promising, you know, young, scholars. So basically what the Meiri is trying to tell us here is that there is such a concept, and this is very prominent, in these discussions, lo yishana adam l'talmud she'eino hagun, but you should know that that isn't an intellectual reference. That's a Midos reference. And we'll speak more about this, but just the brief part, the brief story is that, number one, Torah is connected not only with intellectual ideas and development, but more importantly with Midos Tovos and Avodas Hashem. We say Talmud Torah Keneged Kulam. We're not taking an intellectually elitist position. We're taking the position that learning is the foundation, Reishis Chachma Yiras Hashem. So that's number one, and there's a recognition of that. On Hamidu, Talmidim Harbe, there are some of Farshim who explain that the Hamidu refers to elevation and refers exactly to this theme that, you know, you shouldn't think that Talmud Torah is just about the intellect and about people's IQ and their capacity, you know, to understand profound ideas. More important than all of that is that Avodas Hashem is Achdus Hamaskil v'Hamuskal, and it's a way of connecting with the Ribono Shel Olam, and it's a way of you know, accomplishing Tikkun Amidos and some of these other things. So the idea that you can have a Talmud She'eino Hagun in terms of his values and so on is antithetical with that part of Hamidu Talmidim Har. But it's even more than that. It's the idea that Torah is something precious. The third in the triad, which maybe we'll speak about for a couple of minutes, Asu Siagla Torah, establishes this theme very strongly, the preciousness of Torah and the need to protect it and its legacy and to secure it. And the idea that you would be involved with Talmidim She'enam Mehuganim is something that jeopardizes Torah in that sense, the potential to corrupt Torah, and that in two senses. Number one, people who, you know, don't really fully believe in it or have a bit bad midos and therefore will corrupt its messages. More important in some cases is if you train people and you give them the keys, you know, to understanding Torah and especially to being effectively involved in the halachic process, so there's a certain risk when you have, you know, Talmud She'eino Hagun that, you know, that those skills and the stature and credibility and credentials, you know, that come along with it, you know, can be used to corrupt the system and to undermine the system. And unfortunately, you know, throughout Jewish history, this has happened, you know, more than once. It's a Zaken Mamre kind of an idea. Usually the Zaken Mamre is something much more focused and usually somebody more sincere. But, you know, that's a topic in its own right. But the idea of people who, you know, exploit their capabilities, their knowledge, their involvement in the Mesorah for their own purposes, not to further the Mesorah and its legacy, not in a way that's responsible for the past and the future, but, you know, a way which has a different agenda, that's the fear in some cases, kind of even almost a terror or paranoia of teaching Talmidim She'enam Mehuganim. It has nothing to do with intellect. It has everything to do with character and with people understanding that, you know, Torah isn't just a process, but it's a responsibility. And that, you know, you have to be very careful who you train, or try to be careful. It's a very hard thing to do, because you want to be optimistic, and you also believe that Torah is transformative. We'll get back to this point in just a second. And that it, it's, Ora Torah's Machziro Lemutav, right? It's Moshcheu Lebeis HaMedrash. And, so you don't want to, abstain, from teaching people who aren't perfect, aside from the fact that nobody's perfect, but even people in all walks of life and so on and so forth, because, Kihem Chayenu V'Arachemenu, you don't want to deny people this. Again, unlike academic pursuits, Chazal are very strong about, sharing Torah. The idea of withholding, whether it's Nevuah or Torah, is something, copywriting and, keeping for yourself, which is a very critical, theme in academia, is completely antithetical to the idea of sharing Torah. It's supposed to be Omer Davar B'Shem Omer, maybe Gula Liolam, but people should get credit, for their insights. But that's different than, sometimes you work in the academic world. It's a little changed now with the whole internet revolution and the way that people work. It's an interesting phenomenon. But, the whole idea of collaboration is a little bit today. But there are still, two schools of thought in business and in academia. There's the, you can call it the Apple model or the, proprietary model where, people try to succeed, by monopoly or by, copywriting and limiting, or building a system, in other words, where, outside collaboration becomes an impossibility. And then there's the other models, I can call it the Google model, I don't know. Which is, sharing source codes and so on, just giving you a mashal, but meaning this idea that, technology in that case and knowledge and education is enhanced, by talmidim harbe, by getting more people, involved, and that, personal credit, is still something that's important, and there's a whole history of that, but, it shouldn't be something that makes you paranoid to the extent or protective to the point of denying people the benefits of progress, and insight. Now, this has always been an issue in discovery and science. It's always been an issue in education and in ideas. And Torah takes a very collaborative, perspective to these things, which doesn't mean people shouldn't be given credit for their insight. On the contrary, they definitely should. They must. That's part of the Rebbe Talmud, legacy, is to kind of protect that in a significant way. But the responsibility of Talmidim Muhuganim is a different issue. That isn't about sharing the information, the knowledge, the methodology. That you all want to do. The more the merrier. Hamidu Talmidim Harbe. But the care to make sure that you're not creating a monster or you're not giving people tools to undermine what is most precious to you, that's something which has to be thought about very carefully. And especially in our world, where it's very easy to take things out of context, and there's so much, because of the global village, there's just so much accessible and available, and you just have to be so much more careful on the one hand, but you don't want to reach the point where, your care is going to undermine your effectiveness. In a way, that's part of the next topic, Asu Siag LaTorah, which Avos Rav Nosson really elaborates at great length. Maybe we'll get a chance to start that today. But points out that there are two opposite meanings of Siag. The typical one, the one that we, most identify with, is the fence, and the limits. You have to cordon things off in order to protect them and secure them, even if that means, limiting access or limiting heter, and so on. At the same time, there can be a situation where you're so protective that you're just cutting into the core and you're undermining your mission by your caution. So what that perfect balance is, no one knows, but that we should be thinking intelligently and, responsibly about how to achieve it, everybody also agrees. So that's part of this dialectic of Hamidu Talmidim Harbe, but at the same time, Shelo Yishana Adam LaTalmid She'eino Hagun. For all of these various reasons, the Medrash says, And Tosas in Gittin and Samach Omid Aleph also quotes it, that, you know, the reason that there's a, one of the reasons that the form of Torah Shebaal Peh was taken, despite all of the, you know, obvious challenges that imposes, is, you know, to establish that the, or to limit the corruptibility, let's say, of the Torah. In other words, if it was just all out there on the internet, you know, bichsav, so then anybody could pick it up and anybody could do whatever they want with it. The fact that there's a, you know, oral tradition and, you know, Rebbe Talmud and a concept of Talmud She'eino Hagun, this the Medrash doesn't say, this is my elaboration, but the fact that it's, you know, Dor Achar Dor, you know, Akibal Amasar, etc., establishes a deeper and more profound understanding by the chains of the Mesorah, but also greater selectivity in who's going to pass it on and how they're going to pass it on and how much investment of effort they need to be a player, to be an insider, you know, and so on. And again, this fear of corruption is something which shouldn't, you know, it's not something that should paralyze us, but it's something which responsibly we have to think about a lot. So that's Talmidim Harbe, but at the same time being careful to avoid a Talmud She'eino Hagun. At the same time, the Meiri has, again, the second one, and that is, on the one hand, it's great to involve as many people, right, Eitzim Katanim Madlikim Legadolim, everything we just discussed. You never know where the insights are going to come from, and either way, the Keser Torah is something that you want to be Munach Lakol. At the same time, Talmidim Harbe is a pragmatic way also to advance the qualitative agenda of Talmud Torah in a more, you know, specific way. And that is, it's Hevu Mesunim Bedin, Hamidu Talmidim Harbe. Talmidim Harbe Lisa Velitain Bedavar, Kadeshi Isbarer Ha'inyan, Nibain Kula. Again, there's no stira between these two ideas at all. In the bigger picture of Hamidu Talmidim Harbe, Rabbeinu Yonah introduces the machlokas between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai into the picture. And that really was like a very critical debate about educational policy. Beis Shammai taking, you know, a much more limited role. But the way Rabbeinu Yonah has it, which is fascinating, is that, you know, it's an argument about tactics, not about the ultimate goal. Rabbeinu Yonah explains here. Hamidu Talmidim Harbe, Kedas Beis Hillel. I think I read it last week also. Kinyan Shoshani Beis Shammai Omrim Emalamdim Ela the Talmid. This is the way that Rabbeinu Yonah quotes it. The Talmid Hagun, very important. Sanua, the Kasher, the Arei Shemayim, Shenemar, and so on. Beis Hillel Omrim Melamdim Lekol Adam. But then the Rabbeinu Yonah continues, Mea Bishvil Shietzu Mehem Asara, Tovim, sorry, Asara Kedei Shietzu Shnayim, Shnayim Lefi She'en Chem Yodim, Eze Mehem Yichshar Zeo Ze, Vim Shnehem Keachad Tovim. Right? V'kohu Maisa Shal Hillel, She'kines L'kol Kol Tamida, V'amar Lehem Tamidai, Yeshkan Kulchem, Amr Lo Hei, Amr Lo Echad Mitamidai, Mitamidav, sorry, Kulam Kan Chutz Mikatan Shebahem. Amalehem Yavo Katan Sh'asid Hadar Li Snaig Al Yada. Very beautiful exchange. The Vilol Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai, who is the Katan, right? Hine Ki Ein Lidkos Aktanim Ibn Agdolim Kahagidim Nasu Tiyashim. Velinan Zed Darshu Razal Babokas Razar Echa LeErev Al Tanachet Echa, which of course is referring to the obligation to procreate. But as we know, procreation and the producing of Talmidim is our Haynu Hach. Im hem marita talmidim bebachrusacha, hamei talmidim beziknusacha. We spoke about that last week also. Ki nei ki harbos talmidim, davar tovu ad ma'od uskusulo l'rav. So what's fascinating is when Rabbeinu Yonah quotes this argument between the Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, he quotes it in a way that, as I said, you know, it ends up being a machlokas kind of a metzius, or a, you know, tactical machlokas. What's the best way to produce your gedolei hador who are going to give you direction and going to, you know, secure the Mesorah for the next generation and provide leadership? The answer is, you know, you can do it by, you know, a small coterie of elite you know, students we focus on, or you can shlach lachmacha it, you know, and say, you know what, you know, let everybody come, and you know, the elef will produce mea, the mea will produce, you know, the ten, the ten, the two. It's, even the end is interesting. It's not the 10 to 1; it's the 10 to 2, because you don't know which among the two. That's also very, very fascinating. It's not a definitive one. At least there should be two or more. But if you look in Avos Rav Nosson, the presentation is a little bit different. V'hamidu talmidim harbe. This is a perek base in Avos Rav Nosson Mishnah Tes. Hamidu talmidim harbe. Shabbay shamei omrim al yishane adam ela lemi shehu chacham v'anav. Right? So that part is consistent with the Rinyon. Then comes Uben Avot V'Ashir. That's a little bit interesting. Yichus and wealth. The Mefarshim say it doesn't mean that, right? Clearly, Ben Yonah, you know, was not going in that direction either. So Ben Avot, they say, oh, he is a true, you know, son of his forefathers, meaning Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov. Terms of his humility, his focus, I would add maybe even Ben Avot in the sense that, you know, that there's a concept of Mesorah, you know, from Av to Ben, right? Doesn't mean Miyuchas, it means having those sensibilities. The Ashir, so some of them Farshim say, Ezu Ashir Asameach Bechelko, again, it's a temperament. Even if it actually refers to Ashir, it's not Ashir per se. It's somebody who doesn't obviously have the distraction, you know, of Parnassa, who can focus on his studies. But the idea that some of the Mefarshim suggested that this meant Hasamech Bechalko, that it's a Midah Tova, is very, very interesting. Either way, that's the presentation of Beis Shammai. The presentation of Beis Hillel. Beis Hillel Omrim, Lekol Adam Yishaneh, Sheharbei Poshim Hoyu Bahem BeYisrael, V'Niskarvu LeTalmud Torah, V'Yotzu Mehem Tzadikim Chasidim. So this, of course, refers to the transformative capacity of Talmud Torah in terms of Midos, Tovos, and so on. And here, at least in this presentation, it's not, you know, just a method of producing, you know, the two, or even the ten or the hundred, never mind the one. It's because, per se, the koach that Talmud Torah has and its relevance to all of Klal Yisrael. So it's just very interesting in a way, you know, especially that Rabbeinu Yonah, you know, who is very strongly associated with, you know, Shari Tshuva and, you know, kind of, you know, Chassidut, not the Neo type and not the, you know, 18th century, you know, type either, by the way. But, you know, the, you know, Chassidus of, you know, Lifnim Meshur Sadin, you know, Chassidim HaRishonim type and, you know, certain piety that we're talking about. I'm not saying the others aren't pious also, but I just don't mean we're not associating with a particular movement. But, you know, Rabbeinu Yonah was, you know, known to be, if you will, a kind of Baal Musar. Rabbeinu Yonah's reputation was certainly not as an elitist, you know, certainly not as an intellectual elitist. When you say the name Rabbeinu Yonah, you know, in intellectual, Jewish intellectual historical circles, you know, hashkafically, it's, you know, Rabbeinu Yonah, Chassid, you know, basically, the author of the Shari Tshuva, and so on. So it's interesting that he's the one who presents, even Beis Hillel, you know, more as a mechanism to produce, you know, the elitist leaders and manhigim of the next generation. It just shows you that, you know, that's an important factor, you know, no matter what your other orientation is, A and B, never try to predict Rishonim. It's always better to reconstruct them because, you know, they're unpredictable. They operate in a complex way. They have multiple agendas, and that's the way it should be. There can be patterns, and in light of expected and predicted directions, you know, you can even gain greater appreciation for the, I guess, you know, what to you seems like a deviation. This is a great example of that. So I just wanted to contrast that with the Rambam, who in Hilchos Talmud Torah, we read it last time, Perek Aleph, Hilchos Talmud Torah Halacha Beis, you know, has a very, very strong statement about the democracy for the democratic character of, you know, the Keser Torah, and the idea that every Jew, you know, the other perspective on Beis Hillel, the idea that, you know, the transformative character of Talmud Torah is what determines. Again, it's the Gaon of Vilna, who was certainly an intellectual elite in some respect, in terms of his own stature, you know, who develops the idea that Talmud Torah, Ein Lehem Shiur Lamata, you know, refers even to letters. And the way he says it is that, you know, imagine if, you know, if learning, you know, the alphabet, or a couple of words, or some small amount, you know, Shachas V'Arvis, you know, if that's considered to be Keneged Kulam, so imagine, you know, Ein Lecha, you know, a greater motivation, you know, for learning maximally, you know, than that. Instead of seeing it as, you know, oh, you can get away with this, and that's fine. Mitzvah, you know, Lo La'omro Bifnei Ha'aretz, basically the Gra is trying to explain, you know, Talmud Torah, Ein Lehem Shiur, in the other way, meaning if even a little is so transformative, then how much more would you want to take the opportunity, you know, to maximize your exposure? This is the Gra, you know, who knew Kol HaTorah Kula, and, you know, whose Hasmada, you know, is legendary, legion and legendary. So it's just always interesting, you know, where these insights, and it's inspiring, you know, where the insights come from. So the supposedly intellectually elite, you know, Rambam, you know, whose doctrines, you know, in Mor Nevuchim in particular, but also comes across very clearly in Yana Chazaka, about the role of intellectual perfection as a religious value, you know, are very striking and very much part of his legacy, whether it's Hashkacha or Nevuah or and so on and so forth. I mean, some of these need to be tempered a little bit by other things. That's not the point. But it's beyond question that the Rambam does project intellectual attainment as a critical religious component. Nonetheless, the Rambam is somebody who is very sensitive to the democratic character of the Keser Torah. By which I mean not only that, you know, who you educate shouldn't, you know, come from, or shouldn't be confined in any way or defined in any way by a particular class. That in al maladaber, we're not talking about elitism in a social sense. I'm talking about even in terms of the intellectual elite is something that the Rambam doesn't emphasize so much in the context of the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, and the idea that it's a keser, which is olal gabeim, and which is munach lakol by definition. It doesn't mean that it isn't hard work, and it doesn't mean that the attainments aren't also intellectually measured, but at least this aspect of it is something that the Rambam is, you know, who would have thought Rabbi Yonah would be emphasizing that, and Rambam would be emphasizing that, but, you know, kachav, and I say it's very inspirational in a way. In assessing the machlokas between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, then, obviously it matters whether or not, you know, the goal is the same and the tactics are different, or the goals are also different. But assuming for the moment that the goals are, or that the perspective is a little bit different, so you know, it's interesting to connect this, you know, with other issues, because in part, obviously, this fits in very nicely with the you know, with the broader perspectives or attitudes of associated with Hillel and Shammai in terms of their assessment of you know, human character. Again, we know the stories in Masechet Shabbos about, you know, Hillel and Shammai, and the idea that, you know, Shammai was you know, one could say a little bit less confident, you know, about less patient because he was less confident in, you know, in every man's, let's say, capacity, you know, to absorb, you know, certain things. Whereas Hillel had a great deal of optimism about that. Now, again, that doesn't have to be halachic machlokas, but it is an important perspective which will have impact in tactics. In other words, instead of seeing both Hillel and Shammai in Rabbeinu Yonah terms, as seeing Hamidu Talmidim Harbe, you know, what's the best methodology to produce the Manhigei Ador, one could also go the other direction, and that is to see even the position of Beis Shammai not so much about manhigus as about keser Torah, which is omed umunach lakol, but trying to figure out, like, where, when you have, you know, limited resources, where do you put your efforts, right? And this is a question that we struggle with all the time, whether it's financial resources or time resources. Who are you going to invest in? Let's say not to produce leadership for the moment. Take against Rabbi Yonah. Who are you going to invest in terms of just being marbe Torah, and you know, both in the sense of every generation's accumulated insights, you know, in Torah that move it forward for the next generation, as well as the, you know, the moral and spiritual, you know, impact that all of that has, as we've been discussing. So is it better to focus on, you know, the group, you know, which has greater promise? Or again, the Shlach Lachmacha approach, not as a tactic, but as a principle. So here you might say that Beis Shammai really agree with Beis Hillel. They just think that given, you know, monetary, temporal, you know, human resource limitations, you know, the best way to spread the influence of Torah is to focus on the more high-powered, you know, Talmidim, or the ones that you know, seem more conducive, you know, to being that. And here, it's very possible that the argument between Hillel and Shammai is based on an assessment of human nature, and, you know, the way the Torah views, you know, human nature. And again, you know, we quote the language of the famous formulation of the Rambam in Perek Beis Hilchos Geirushin, when he talks about Kofer Oso Ad Sheyom HaRotzani, where the Rambam basically says, you know, every Jew really, you know, has this fundamental nature of an Oved Hashem, you know, and somebody who wants to live his life in a manner that is consistent with Ritzon Hashem. You know, Batel Ritzon Chal Ritzono is like the natural proclivity of a man or of a Jew. As such, that's how he explains Kofen Oso Ad Sheyom HaRotzani, that basically, you know, you're just, you know, giving him the opportunity to do what he really wants, instead of saying, well, we're imposing this on you, but he agrees in the end, you know, agavom se gomar maknele, meaning he gives him the pressure. What we're really saying is, no, he, you know, we're just encouraging him to find his real true will, his authentic will. And the Rav spoke about this a lot in the context of tshuva. He used to quote this Rambam a lot, meaning, you know, you're trying to find the real I, the I with a capital I, you know, the real, you know, your real self. Just that, you know, the Torah has greater insight than you do into who that real I, you know, is. So in a sense, that's what the Beis Hillel is emphasizing very much. The stories of Beis Hillel, which are, you know, to shepherd people along, you know, and to, you know, be more patient, and to, you know, project that, you know, that patience will lead to something real and authentic, is really based on this idea, the koach haTorah, the taken, and to shape people's personality and so on. Again, the moshcheu lebeis hamedrash, or Talmud Torah as the means for tshuva, is all based on this idea. That's really what the Avost Rav Nosson report of Beis Hillel is all about, right? How many people that were, you know, given up, you know, for spiritually lost, you know, turned their lives around because of their exposure to Torah. Therefore, the open enrollment policy, you know, the idea of, you know, universal education for every Jew is a critical idea, and it's not a compromise. On the other hand, you know, Beis Shammai were, you know, had maybe a little extra concern with Talmud, you know, Sheino Hagun, number one. As I said before, it's not a small matter, and it's not a side point. You know, precisely because we think Talmud Torah is such a powerful force and is so transformative, so, you know, somebody who, you know, we speak about a little knowledge, you know, being a dangerous thing, which is probably the idea behind you know, Nashim Daton Kalos in the Gemara and Sota. The Gemara says it, and it's probably not an intellectual statement. It doesn't, you know, seem to be. It's the idea that, you know, people whose, you know, exposure based on whatever reason, lack of a chiyuv, sociologically, whatever it is, you know, an exposure which is not necessarily obligatory or reinforced all the time is something which can end up being, you know, more counterproductive than productive. Because if you have people who, you know, think that they control material or information or understanding, you know, and they don't, then in any field, just Talmud Torah is the most important field. That can be a very problematic thing, and we see this in all fields, and we see it in Judaism as well. So the Beis Shammai may have just had a very, based on experience or based on a more pessimistic personality type, whatever it was, or based on a principled understanding of the forces of nature and Torah and Halacha, may have just believed that the problem of Talmud She'eino Hagun is something really to be very, very cautious about. And therefore, even though the goal, is universal education, every Jew is part of the Keser Torah, but in order to ensure that the dangers, don't dominate the benefits, educational policy is just going to be different. Balkeri is also B'Talmud Torah, the Gemara says in Brachos, because Talmud Torah requires a certain standard, right? A certain level of yira. And, the Balkeri, who, is already problematic in that regard, is somebody who, should refrain from certain aspects of Talmud Torah. The yira, the fachad, all of that is critical. And, Avraham Avinu, who was, the ultimate, Makarev, that's why it's Abraham Ohavi, and that's what the Rambam says in Sefer Mitzvos. The enthusiasm, bubbled over in Avraham Avinu and pushed him to reach out. So the first Makarev, was really Avraham Avinu, clearly. But the same Avraham Avinu knew that, some people are incorrigible and that you have to be careful and you have to be protective. Avraham Avinu knew he was also the first, Merachek es Hakrovim, although that's not the title that we associate with him, and understandably so, because it was something that he did, b'di'eved, because he had to. But the fact that he did it when he had to, even though it was against his nature, is a critical, part of his character makeup. So when he, said to Lot, we're going in different directions now, because he reached the conclusion that keeping him in his midst would undermine, his spiritual agenda. So that was painful for Avraham Avinu, and even then, he didn't turn his back on him. He continued to treat him not only as a nephew, but as a brother. And that's the Pidyon Shvuyim story in the language that the Torah uses. But, V'hu Yoshev B'Sodom, despite the fact that he was Yoshev B'Sodom. But there was still a recognition that a Talmud She'eino Hagun can bring the whole thing down, can jeopardize the whole Avraham Ohavi, the whole Elokei, Hashemayim and Elokei Haaretz agenda of Avraham Avinu. And the same was true with Yishmael. Again, Vayera Be'enav, Avraham Avinu had great ambivalence, but in the end of the day, he took the hard decision, when he felt that Yitzchak's environment was being jeopardized too much by the presence of Yishmael. That was Sarah's insight. She could see it. She had greater objectivity in this particular case, or maybe greater insight, into that part of things. Maybe it was very hard for Avraham, whether it was in the case of Lot or Yishmael or anybody, to see anything other than the Beis Hillel, side of things. But Sarah, in the case of Yishmael, because she was less involved, or maybe just in general, because she was a different person and came from a different background. In this case, she had the right insight, but Avraham Avinu, was told to follow it and did follow it. So the model of knowing what the red lines are when it comes to Talmud She'eino Hagun, or just pouring limited resources into things, who are you going to invest in? Kibi Yitzchak Yikari Lecha Zara, right? Is a critical is a critical decision to make. So the argument between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel is unquestionably on one level an argument about Keser Torah and ideology and priority, you know, an elitism versus, you know, pure democracy. But in both directions, right, there are also other issues. There's the question of Talmud Sheinu Hagun and relating to all of that. And I mean that, you know, in the broadest sense. And at the same time, there's the Beis Hillel side of it, which is, you know, not only the relevance of not only the agenda of elitism, which is served by also democracy, but the value of a more democratic approach in its own right, as well as not overstating or being too paranoid, you know, when it comes to Talmud Sheinu Hagun, knowing what it is and knowing what it's not, knowing certainly that it's not about the intellectual elite and certainly not social elite or anything like that, but it's about, you know, also making efforts to neutralize Talmud Sheinu Hagun, but with some risks that are involved as well. So these are some of the positions of the Rishonim, and some of the, there's some interesting ha'aros in the Medrash Shmuel, which maybe I'll mention next time, that specifically address, you know, this dialectic, this idea of Talmud Sheinu Hagun, you know, as a limit, but still, you know, moving forward on Hamidu Talmidim Harbe. Of course, in our own era, you know, every era has this challenge. It's endemic to the Jewish community. Every era has its own specific issues, and ours in particular. As I say, the, you know, the exposure that people have to everything and anything, which is a relatively recent phenomenon, is a huge opportunity, as we know. And it's also imposes a certain greater responsibility as well. You have to be careful because you don't know that the audience that's hearing you is in many cases not the audience that's sitting in front of you. You know, einecha, you know, ro'os es morecha is not just a nice thing, it's also a substantive thing. That's the way it comes off in the Gemara a little bit. Meaning, you know, when you see the Rebbe giving the shir, sometimes he's smiling and sometimes he's frowning, you know, and sometimes, you know, there's his eyes are shining and there's a little of whimsy behind what he's saying. You know, you can also be inspired or whatever, or, you know, he's moved by certain things that he talks about and says. All of this is part of Talmud Torah. It's also part of the relationship. It's part of the idea of a walking Sefer Torah who's more than the sum of his parts. And you don't have that when you hear a tape or when you listen, you know, digitally. And, you know, it's as basic and elemental as, you know, knowing whether somebody's being humorous or not, or how deeply and with what level of conviction he's saying what he means, which is a function of, you know, body language and facial expressions, and even more so having experience with a certain person. You know, so you know what this means to him, you know, because you've seen it many times, and your intuition and your instinct, you know, just kick in, as they do in any, you know, contextual relationship which we have, you know, with people. It's as simple as that, but it's also more than that, as I say. It's these other elements which are part of Talmud Torah, which aren't peripheral. So sometimes you can just, you know, when you're hearing but not seeing, and it could be sometimes that you're hearing and seeing, but you just don't have a relationship with the person, so you're not in a position to properly translate those social cues or body language or either. So I don't mean to focus on the digital at the moment. It could be that there will be video, or a person can even be in a crowd. But what I'm saying is that, you know, a lecturer or a teacher, you know, needs to be thinking bismanenu much more so than in previous times, you know, about, you know, his multiple audiences. And sometimes, you know, that can be a good thing, and sometimes it can be a limiting thing, and you have to be careful about that. In addition, you know, it's not just who the audience is, it's also what their background is, and what, you know, forget about, you know, expressions and knowledge of the Rebbe. We're just talking about, you know, context itself, terminology. Again, if a little knowledge can be a dangerous thing and can skew perspective, then no knowledge or a little knowledge, you know, of a recipient, a listener, you know, who doesn't necessarily know what you're talking about or where you're coming from or you know, is hearing this lecture but doesn't know who you are and what you speak about all the time. All these things are very challenging. The opportunities are immense, and in the digital age, and the potential corruption, and therefore the need for, you know, responsibility is also great. The dynamic is just different. It's parallel to what always is. The issues are, broadly speaking, you know, the same. It's balancing these themes, but, you know, thinking about it responsibly is not a simple matter. It requires sophistication and an effort and investment, etc. In addition, you know, in our context in particular, so, you know, where the audience is people who have other exposures and live in the real world, not an insulated community, but a community which is very much, you know, part of a larger society. So the question of resources and who you invest in and, you know, how, you know, strict should you be about, you know, who you teach, you know, and the issues of Talmud Sheina Hagun in particular, is a very tricky question. But, you know, something which you can't do properly if you don't at least give it serious consideration. The Beis Hillel and the Beis Shammai, the Rabbeinu Yonah, the Rambam, you know, the Rashi, the Rabbeinu Bechaya, and the Meiri, and more, and all the Rav Nosson, all of these are themes, and all of them in each generation, you know, need to be applied as accurately and as responsibly as we can. And I'd say this leads in a way, to the next idea, which is Asu Siag LaTorah, which we'll pick up with, you know, I don't know, next week maybe we'll do something on Pesach, but we'll pick up the next time that we do Avos. And I said, it's very fascinating if you look at just as a preamble, you know, Bizmanenu in particular, and in the world that we live, you know, our part of the Jewish community, there's such a misunderstanding or lack of appreciation of Asu Siag LaTorah. You know, people see it as, you know, politics. And it isn't at all. It's a critical component of Torah itself. Rabbeinu Yonah here, Al Atar, says that Asu Siag LaTorah is the real test for a person's devotion. Because for a person to be scrupulous about fulfilling the substantive mitzvah is understandable. But the ability to be disciplined and to appreciate that, you know, these are things that should be therefore cherished, and therefore you cut in to the heter part, you know, in order to protect it. The idea of protection already isn't just about the compelling character of a particular category or mitzvah. It's about appreciating the system and appreciating, you know, the sense of responsibility and legacy. And Rabbeinu Yonah basically says that the truly admirable Oved Hashem is somebody, you know, whose performance is measured by how he does siyagim, not how he does mitzvahs. But if you look at in Rabbeinu Yonah, I'm sorry, if you look in Avos Rav Nosson, there's just so much material on Asu Siag LaTorah. It's just, you know, it starts, you know, in Perek Aleph, I think Mishnah Hay, and goes all the way basically to the last Mishnah in Perek Beis Tes, which is the Habinu Talmid of Harbe. But Asu Siag LaTorah, and it's basically Asu Siag LaTorah. I'll just read you the beginning of it. Everybody was, you know, involved in Asu Siag LaTorah. And obviously what Avos Rav Nosson is trying to say, from the Ribbono Shel Olam to begin with, you know, with the Eitz Hadas, Asu Siag LaTorah, Asay Siag LaDvarecha, Kederach She'asa, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Siag LaDvarav, Adam HaRishon Asa Siag LaDvarav, Torah Asa Siag LaDvareha, Moshe Asa Siag LaDvarav, Af Iyov, Af Nevi'im, Chachamim, Kulam Asa Siag LaDvareim, and then he goes on and he elaborates, you know, each and every one. It's very fascinating. The idea of a Siag Daraisa, which we've spoken about, maybe Bal Yerovah Ba'imatzeh is a Siag Daraisa according to some Rishonim, maybe Chatzishir is a Siag Daraisa according to some Rishonim, the Isser of, you know, Kiruv Basar, you know, for an Erva, Avos Rav Nosson thinks that that's a Siag Daraisa. You know, that's part of the Ribbono Shel Olam's, you know, Siag. So, this idea of the preciousness of Halacha, and therefore, you know, like anything precious that you want to cherish and you want to protect and preserve is a critical idea. And as I say, at the same time, you just don't want to be so protective that you lose the core of it. And that's always the danger. And in the treatment of Avos Rav Nachman and some of the Mefarshim here, you really get, you know, both of these themes. So we'll try to continue next time and speak about some of these issues. At 12 o'clock, and they need the room? 12 o'clock, you want to be there? 12.